The Lord be with you. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Mark. After making the crossing to the other side of the sea, Jesus and his disciples came to land at Gennesaret and tied up there. As they were leaving the boat, people immediately recognized him. They scurried about the surrounding country and began to bring in the sick on mats to wherever they heard he was. Whatever villages or towns or countryside he entered, they laid the sick in the marketplaces and begged him that they might touch only the tassel on his cloak. And as many as touched it were healed. The Gospel of the Lord. Yesterday, before the 10 a.m. Mass, Deacon Greg, the altar servers, and I walked around the church, as usual, to prepare to start Mass. Deacon Greg made a comment that I heard as both a compliment, but also a caution. He observed, "You will be known as the IC pastor who moved the tabernacle to the middle and changed the altar servers' robes into cassocks and surplices." Did you notice the sharp new black cassocks and the crisp white surplices yesterday? Finally, the altar servers will not be able to sit there and twirl those dreaded ropes hanging from their waists. And I suppose all pastors are known later for what they build or change. Monsignor Tom Walsh built the extension to the rectory that is currently my bedroom. Monsignor John O'Donnell added the heavy bronze doors where you enter the church. And Monsignor William Galvin had to preside over the implementation of all the liturgical changes after Vatican II, the Mass in English, not Latin, the priest facing the people at the altar, etc. These are important changes, and we should honor the pastors who courageously brought them about. But there is another building project we should be far more concerned with constructing, namely the church, the body of Christ, filled with living stones. That is, a pastor's real construction project is each precious individual Christian, and especially that cell of society, the family. As St. Peter, the first great architect of God's house, taught, like living stones, let yourselves be built into a spiritual house, to be a holy priesthood, to offer spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God through Jesus Christ. In other words, the true legacy of any pastor is not altars or cassocks or bronze doors, but how he built up each Christian as a child of God. I hope stopping the twirling of ropes counts towards that spiritual building. Our two scriptures today talk about both types of construction projects. The first with wood, marble, and stone. The second with men, women, and the sick. Solomon boasts at the consecration of the first Jerusalem temple, "I have truly built you a princely house, a dwelling where you may abide forever." The son of David built that temple around 960 BC, but it would be completely crushed and obliterated by 586 BC by the Babylonians. By contrast, in the gospel, Jesus builds a temple with living stones, human beings who are created in the image and likeness of God. We read in Mark 6, verse 56, "They begged him that they might touch only the tassel on his cloak, and as many as touched it were healed." I don't know if any of the sick were teenagers, but they probably twirled Jesus' tassel while they were hoping to be healed. Jesus did not undertake any major construction projects because he was building with living stones the true temple of his body, the church. Lately, I have been giving talks on Pope St. John Paul II's theology of the body to anyone willing to listen to me. You may remember trying to survive them last year as I delivered them piecemeal at morning masses. I have shared them with Bible study groups, with college campus ministry groups, and in March, I will deliver a conference in Orlando. Yep, my sister's request again. Called To Boldly Go. The title is from the memorable intro to Star Trek, which states dramatically, to boldly go where no man has gone before. Why am I so obsessed with the theology of the body? Well, there are a number of reasons. One, John Paul has provided a new language to talk about the faith that is more relevant than traditional theology that puts people to sleep. Second, he addresses the deep confusion our society faces about being a man or a woman or being a furry. Third, he provides an antidote to the temptation that plagues every person at some point in their lives, namely sexual sins. John Paul shows us the way out of the maze of morality that is modern culture. But I also believe the theology of the body will be John Paul II's lasting legacy. He is an architect, not like Solomon, who built with dead stones, but like Jesus, who desired to heal the living stones of every person so that they discovered their great dignity as a child of God. The theology of the body offers a great deal of healing. Theologians generally agree that the famous line from the Vatican II document, Gaudium et Spes, Joys and Hopes, number 22, was contributed by John Paul. We read there, Christ, the final Adam, fully reveals man to man himself and makes his supreme calling clear. That statement, in a nutshell, expresses the project of the theology of the body. No human person is dispensable, but rather filled with immeasurable dignity. You are a child of God. I am a child of God. And we are called by Christ to a supreme end, perfect union with him in eternal bliss. Indeed, to boldly go where no man has gone before. Praised be Jesus Christ.